This is Julie Halston in Classical Julie in New York City, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Good morning, goddammit! This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am very excited to be talking to an actress, a veteran actress of the New York stage and also movies, and now you can even see her doing cabaret. In fact, she is a four-time MAC Award winner for her solo cabaret performances. She's doing now Classical Julie at Birdland. That's happening until March 25th, and it's a good thing it's called Classical Julie because her name happens to be Julie. In fact, it's Julie Halston. She was Drama Desk nominated for a couple of shows that she did. Oh, let's just talk to the wonderful, the delightful, and the funny Julie Halston. Shalom, Julie.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
Oh, I love the singing.
I couldn't believe what you were saying. I actually did sound like I was accomplished and important.
I know. See, I tend to do that. And then as the guest begins to speak, we realize just how worthless they are.
Oh, how lame it all is. No.
Not at all.
We're having a great time at Birdland. We had our opening night March 4th. It was a glitterati, sold-out show. We had the great comedian Lisa Lampanelli.
Oh, yes.
The playwright Charles Bush and the fantastic actress Tyne Daly.
Oh, my goodness.
It was fantastic. Right.
Was she Cagney or Lacey?
Really great.
Was she Cagney or Lacey? Which one was she?
She was both. She's such a great actress. She can do both.
She was so talented.
She really can do anything.
That's right. It's like the scene in Chinatown. I am Cagney. I am Lacey. I am Cagney and Lacey.
Exactly. My mother, my daughter, my Cagney, my Lacey, my anything. She's fantastic. She's one of my favorite actresses of all time. She's also a great woman. And Lisa Lampanelli is a dear friend. And it was just great having them in the audience. And a lot of Broadway people were there. And a lot of Long Island people were there.
Oh, this is
one of the whole things that I'm talking about is growing up on Long Island.
I did not know that. So tell us about the show itself, Classical Julie. How does this involve Long Island and, more importantly, Jewishness?
Well, here's the thing. I'm actually an Italian-Irish girl who desperately wishes she was Jewish.
Don't we all?
And, a lapsed Catholic desperate to be a Jew. That's been my whole life story. But here's the thing about how Classical Julie came about. I realized that I was never called for classical theater. You know, they would be doing Medea on Broadway or Hedda Gabler. And I kept thinking, why am I not called for these? Well, maybe it has something to do with my Long Island accent, the fact that I was not trained at Juilliard, but I am an Irish-Italian girl from Commack, Long Island, and I think that gives me the gravitas to do the classics. So I decided to write a show where I do the classics in the Commackian way, the Long Island way.
Commackian, yes.
Yes, I call it the Commackian way. And I have to say, people are really, really responding. And I also do some of my own classic bits that I've been developing over the years where I read, for example, the New York Times wedding announcements, or I read celebrity autobiography of, like, Joe Crawford or Nancy Reagan.
Aye.
And, you know, people have been responding to this material for years. And so I do some of my own classic bits, and I also do classical theater in the Commackian way. And I talk about what it is to grow up on Long Island. I talk about my mom, who still lives in Commack, Long Island. I went to school at Hofstra.
Oh, my God, Hofstra.
I lived in Great Neck for a little while, for a summer. I lived in Great Neck.
That's where my temple is, Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck. We were locating a gas station for our first 3 years. It was exciting. Before we got an actual building, we would have prayers, and then when people had to come in, the cars would pull up, we'd stop praying, we'd fill them up, we'd wipe their windows, and then we'd start praying again. And it worked.
That's hilarious.
Thank you.
That's hilarious.
Thank you. Well, you wouldn't know, because
a blessing and gas and an oil treatment all at the same time.
Exactly. We fill up your soul, we fill up your tank. That's how, that was our motto back then.
I love it. So anyway, what the show is all about. And I have to tell you, people are responding in droves. We were completely sold out opening night. We're now filling up for the next three performances. It's every Monday in March.
Right.
At Birdland at West 44th Street, and it's such an incredible club. And you come, you have a seat, you have an appetizer, you have a drink, you get a comedy show for an hour. It's completely the best of New York nightlife.
And is there any chance that it will run beyond March 25th? Are they talking about that, or for now it's just the 20 of other commitments?
Yeah, right now it's only the four performances, but depending, we have reviewers coming. If the reviews are very good, we don't know, we might have an extension. But right now, it's four dates in March. So we'll see what happens. I know for a fact that some of the reviewers were there on opening night, and the buzz is that the reviews are going to be good. But, you know, who knows? I haven't seen them yet. But I'm very, very pleased. It's been a wonderful, wonderful show, a wonderful experience. And I love it when people from Long Island are in the house. I mean, you know, when Long Island's in the house, it's a good time.
I totally agree with you.
Philippines are a particular group of people. You know what I mean? We're down home folk.
This is true. Or if they were hit with Hurricane Sandy, their homes are a half a mile away from where they were, but they're still down home. It's just sort of halfway in a pit.
The spirit of Long Islanders you cannot top it. It's unbelievable. And you know what? At this time, I think everyone needs a laugh, don't we? Hello?
Hello. Yeah, no, absolutely. Considering the state of the world and the sequestration, I don't even know what the hell that is, but everybody's saying that word, so I'm saying it too. Sequestration, people need a giggle.
It's the sequester. I don't know what they're talking about. Usually when I hear the word sequester, I think, oh my God, we're being sequestered by a jury because, you know, they're deadlocked or something. So I don't know what this sequester thing is. We're falling off financial cliffs and fiscal this and that, but whatever. I say come to Birdland, have a drink, and laugh.
Now let me, I don't want to put you on the spot, but my problem is that part of my audience is here in Colorado, and the rest of my audience is really, really cheap and broke. So can you give us just a little bit of a taste of you doing some kind of classical piece in a Comackian Long Islandy style? I wouldn't say Medea, because that's a big Schwarzer guy who does these gospel musicals. But maybe another Shakespearean or classical piece. Just a shtickle, a taste.
Well, I do talk about, for example, Blanche Dubois.
Okay.
Who was, you know,
not exactly classical theater,
Blanche
but
Dubois.
Yeah.
And what I say is, you know, does it have to be in New Orleans? Couldn't it be on the south shore of Long Island? Streetcar Named Desire, couldn't that be a Long Island Railroad stop in Massapequa? And, you know, the way Blanche Dubois is always done in that southern style, I think she could be done as a Long Island medium, like the Long Island medium. You know, I want magic. Yeah, magic. And if, you know, I don't want to be the truth. And if that's sinful, let me be damned for it. I think we can do everything with a Long Island accent. I think it adds a nice twist to the classics.
I'm thinking so. Have you tried August Wilson yet? That would be interesting.
I haven't done August Wilson yet. I do Nora from A Doll's House. I do Blanche Dubois. I do Medea, darling, because I can do Greek tragedy. And I do a lot of material about my mother, because my mother is sort of one of those people. She's very misinformed and very opinionated, which is the key to comedy, believe me.
So the key to Long Island, but yes.
Yes, a Long Island housewife with a lot of opinions. Come on, that's funny. And she, in 88, you know, here's the other thing about when you get older. Listen, I'm a middle-aged woman. I'm getting skin tags. I feel like I should be on Animal Planet. But one good thing about being older is that you can say whatever you want and you can get away with it.
That's right.
I mean, people are not going to take you to death. I went to visit my dearest childhood friend's mother recently. She's 88 years old. And we went to visit her. And he said, oh, Ma, Julie's here. You remember Ma? You remember her? And she said, oh, sure. She said, now I'll tell you about another person I never liked. I couldn't believe it. I just burst out laughing. I wasn't even
Remember when, George Burns was 97 years old, and he pointed to a five-year-old girl, and he said, "Oh, I would like to shtup her in the tuchus." No, he never actually said that, but I thought he could have at that age and gotten away with it because he was George Burns and he was 98.
Yeah, well, exactly. I guess they thought, oh, my God, he's gone a little crazy. And but, I mean, obviously, nowadays, he'd be arrested.
Well, at 90, if he were still 96, maybe. But once he...
It's fascinating. So those are the kind of things. And I will tell you that at my first show, there were so many young people. And if young people want to sit at the bar, it's cheap seats. It's like $20.
That's
$20 and a drink. You get away with the night for like $30.
Wow, that's,
that's not bad. That's good. Even college kids can for one night.
Well, you heard what happened. Huh? That's the thing with Feinstein's closed a few months ago. Just they were charging you. You couldn't walk in the door of Feinstein's without paying $150. And what happens? Nobody went. So now he's trying to. I think he's getting involved with 54 Below or something like that. I'm not sure.
Right. I know. And that's the thing. The problem is there's so many alternatives. But really, even my friends who have money, they're not going to spend 100 clams just to walk in a door. Why would they? I don't blame them.
Would they make a donation to a shul?
That would be a big headliner to pull that off.
Well, these friends with money, if you have their phone numbers, I would very much like to know them.
Well, of course, we all would. We'll all be calling those numbers. But that's the thing about this show is that you can actually sit at the bar, have a drink. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You can really enjoy a night out in a beautiful nightclub. Birdland is gorgeous.
It is.
And it's legendary. It's the jazz club, Birdland Jazz Club. And it's beautiful. Jim Caruso, who runs Jim Caruso's Cast Party.
Monday nights. He was on the Dave's Gone By program a few months ago. Jim, wonderful guy, Jim Caruso.
Oh, he's fantastic. And he always introduces me. And, you can go online right now at BroadwayWorld.com and see the pictures from the show, and you'll see how much fun we're having, and you also get to see what I'm wearing, which is quite beautiful.
Woo-hoo! Tell us, Julie, what are you wearing?
Well, I mean, please, it cost an arm and a leg. I went to Bloomingdale's and bought the new outfit, but it's gorgeous, a spangly top like you wouldn't believe.
But how do you wear it if it just has one sleeve and one leg? No, I'm just kidding, the arm and the leg joke.
No, it's so great. But yes, the pictures are on BroadwayWorld.com. And we're having a ball. I mean, like I said, you can spend a lot of money if you want, and you don't have to spend a lot of money, but you're certainly going to laugh. So that's the great news.
Now, speaking of laughter, let us move on to more of your career. I mean, we've just been talking about this one current show that you're doing, but you have been acting off-Broadway and doing your thing for, I guess, about two or three decades now. How did you get started in the business?
Well, it was a strange little story, isn't it? I ended up meeting Charles Bush, who was doing a one-man show at the time. It was called Alone with a Cast of Thousands. I mean, it was a cheap show, He was just playing all the characters.
Okay.
And I loved the show, and I had a lot of friends, so I would keep bringing my friends. And he had just written a little skit show called Vampire Lesbians of Sodom.
Right.
And he lost his leading lady because she didn't really want to stay in a show and do a show in a crack den on the Lower East Side with no toilet. Can you imagine? She didn't want to do that.
Can you say who the leading lady?
He didn't know if I could act or not, which, believe me, at that time I really couldn't. But he desperately needed a leading lady, and he did know that I had a lot of friends. So he kept me in mind because he was desperate. I got into the show, and it took off.
Yes.
It ran for 6 years in off-Broadway, and we started a theater company called Theater in Limbo, and it put us on the map. So we're very, very excited. I mean, and now we're still working together. He just wrote a new a new play to be done in primary stages.
Ah, yes.
And let me tell you, we're going to do a reading of it very soon, I think this week, and it might go to Broadway. So here, that's our latest thing. So we've been working together for decades. But I also just finished a stint in the fantastic Tony Award-winning Anything Goes.
Oh, that's right.
On Broadway with Sutton Foster. And it was Joel Grey. I'm looking at a picture of myself right now with Joel Grey. Joel Grey, the legend.
Well, what was it like to work with Joel Grey in Anything Goes?
Well, first of all, we had so much fun. The audience loves Joel Grey. That's number one. The minute Joel Grey walks on stage, people are excited. He is in amazing shape. He looks 60 years old, and he is not 60. He is older than that.
He's 61, isn't he? No, kidding.
He's old. He's 80.
I know. Yes.
We had his 80th birthday party on the stage.
Oh.
He's in amazing shape. The minute Joel Grey is in a show, the audience is already full of love. We had so much fun. Every night was like a party, and he loved the cast. He would come. He would say hello to everybody. It was just a love fest. It was a family. And you bring that energy with you onto the stage. And plus, you're doing a Cole Porter show that is so brilliant. The music is stunning. Kathleen Marshall directed it, and, you know, the choreography was stunning. It was beautifully directed. Everything, every design was gorgeous. It was fantastic. It was just one of the best, you know, 8 or 9 months of my life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That was incredible.
That was Julie Halston's most recent Broadway show, but you've also been in other productions. Like, I do want to ask about your experiences there. You were in The Women back in 2001. You were in Hairspray in 2002. That was your first Broadway musical. What was that like?
Well, my first Broadway musical was actually, I did an on-course production of The Boys from Syracuse, and then I was in Gypsy with Bernadette Peters, but that was a revival, obviously.
Well, wait, I thought Hairspray was first, wasn't it?
No, Hairspray was after.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oops.
Amazing. That was absolutely amazing. And, because, you know, to do a legendary show like that and to play a stripper, come on, I was got to have a gimmick, come on.
You were Elektra, yes.
Yeah, Sam Mendes directed it. It was just an extraordinary event. You know, I will never forget our opening night. You know, my mother seeing Tom Hanks, meeting Tom Hanks, Maggie Smith. Hello?
Oh, my
Hello?
God.
What's bad? There's nothing bad there. It was fantastic. And then Hairspray, I did after that, and that was, oh, come on, it was so much fun. I had to really sing and dance, which I thought, really, am I going to be these kids are, you know, I'm a middle-aged woman, but these kids are, you know.
Did you take lessons? Did you get a vocal coach? Did you get a dancer? What did you do to prepare to do that?
Well, I did nothing to prepare.
Really?
Except basically say to my gay SWAT team, all right, teach me the steps. So I was very, very lucky. The dance captains and the choreographer, Jerry Mitchell, they were so extraordinary. They were fabulous. They just taught me what to do. And I just learned it. That was it. It was great. And I did work with the musical director. They were very, very, patient, I'll tell you. And I learned how to sing the songs. I actually was the understudy for Velma Von Tussle. I actually went on quite a bit where I had to sing Baltimore Crabs, had to move and dance and wear those huge wigs. And it was so much fun. It was so great. And Andrew Reynolds was our Link Larkin after he had taken over for the original.
Oh, he must have been a child back then.
Andrew Reynolds is now, you know, he was the star of the Book of Mormon,
right.
And now he's on the NBC show, the New Normal. And he and I became fast friends, and we just had so much fun doing Hairspray. Hey there, this is Julie Halston in Classical Julie in New York City, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
I want to get back, though, also to Gypsy, because that was such a, you know, yeah, Bernadette Peters playing Mama Rose in that, directed by Sam Mendes. I would love to know your thoughts about, more thoughts about doing that show, more specifically, especially since, you know, there was, I wouldn't say there was controversy about that production, but Arthur Lawrence...
Oh, there was controversy about it, though.
Because
Arthur Lawrence really, you know, he did not, he was not really that supportive of the production.
Did that, I mean, what was the atmosphere when he started, you know, picking at you guys and saying, no, don't do it this way, and what the hell is Sam Mendes doing, and it doesn't look, I mean... How
he never did it to us directly, so I think he went through Sam, you know. So, but Sam always, you know, was very, very calming. So it was never very tense, I have to tell you that.
Good.
It was only behind the scenes. But we sent, you know, Arthur really liked to direct his own productions of Gypsy, so I think it was a little difficult for him. I'm speaking a little out of turn, but I think it was a little difficult for him not to be directing his show, because he wrote the show. It's a brilliant show. But Sam really kept all that away from us. And, you know, Bernadette Peters is the nicest woman
in the world,
and the most beautiful. I mean, she's just extraordinary. And it was a great process. And I will say this, And I love Patti LuPone. I love all the Gypsies. I'll just go see Gypsy in a local, you know, grammar school. I love it so much. But our production of Gypsy actually did run longer than I think the one that Patti LuPone did on Broadway. And she did win the Tony for it. But I think we ran even longer. And that's also the power of Bernadette Peters. She sells tickets.
Oh, well, yes.
She really does sell tickets. There were people who would just come again and again and again because they love Bernadette so much.
Hey, you know what? Could have been. Maybe they were coming for you. Maybe they wanted to see Julie Halston as Elektra. You ever think about that? Maybe it was you.
Very possible. The strippers got great reviews.
I remember that. They did. I did. And you were the one who lit up the bulbs in Elektra. I remember very well.
That's right. So... Yeah.
Tell your agent, it was you. Right. You were the engine driving that Gypsy.
That's what it was. It ran on Broadway because of Julie Halston. No, I must say, though, every night listening to that orchestra, oh, my God.
Oh, my God,
I mean, that's one of the great overtures of all time. So if you're a musical theater geek of any kind, you know, you got to love Gypsy, you know.
It's true.
Mom's got to let go. Come on, for me. Hey there, this is Julie Halston in Classical Julie in New York City, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio. Every experience is great. The Women was a wild experience. We sold out the show before I think we even started the run, and there was nudity in that show. Jennifer Tilly actually was nude and stood up in a bathtub. People were shocked. Kristen Johnston, Cynthia Nixon, Jennifer Tilly, Jennifer Coolidge, myself.
And I think certain members of the audience
stood up naked.
Well, and do you have any thoughts also? One thing that we did not mention on Broadway is that you were in the revival of The Man Who Came to Dinner with Louis J. Stadlin and the one and only Nathan Lane. Do you have any...
One and only Nathan Lane.
Yes, do you have any Nathan Lane memories?
Oh,
right. So any memories of that experience, of working with Nathan Lane, watching him develop a character, do comedy? Was he nice? Was he difficult? I mean, we've heard all sorts of different stories about him. What was your experience?
My experience is that Nathan Lane is a god. I absolutely worship Nathan Lane. I love him. Yes, I have heard that he can be a little cranky. I have never had that experience with him. I think he's one of the most generous performers. I happen to just adore him. He does not suffer fools gladly. Why would he? Hello?
Well, okay.
He's a genius. Louis Stadlin, one of the greats. The minute he walks on stage, you go, okay, we're in good hands.
Right.
That's it. Harriet Harris, one of my dearest girlfriends, we're in good hands the minute she walks on stage. And now she's in Cinderella.
Oh, that's...
I just saw. I went to the opening night. It was brilliant.
Oh, good.
Brilliant. So, yeah, no, these are the pros of all time. They walk on stage, you're in great hands. And also, Nathan just happens to be one of the wittiest, funniest people. You know, we had a technical problem one time when we were doing The Man Who Came to Dinner, and he actually went out there and sort of did like 10 minutes of improv stand-up.
Oh, the audience must have been in stitches. Oh, my God. Good for him. Oh, that's...
Yeah, the audience was great. You know, they loved it. So, no, it's all great. It really is, I have to say. I'm not a... And I can be as gossipy as the next person, but, you know, really, I have nothing bad to say about any of these things.
I'm not looking for dirt. I'm looking for anecdotes and stories. They can be wonderful, happy, positive stories. I just would love to know the things that only you would know because you lived them, and we didn't backstage. You know, that's the thing. So speaking...
No, it was all good. You know, and let's face it, when you're in a show like A Man Who Came to Dinner... It's sort of a hit before it starts because, you know, people want to see Nathan Lane on stage. It's also a classic piece, you know. George Kaufman, hello, he knew how to write. So these are the kind of things that the minute you walk on stage, you feel the support and love. It's always a little harder when you're dealing with new material that has not been tried and true, but that's also a very exciting process. Like Hairspray was a brand new musical. Who knew what was going to really happen with it? Well, it turned out to be a smash, and for a good reason. It's fantastic.
Now, wait a minute. Do you have any Harvey Fierstein stories?
Harvey, you know, he's one of the, you know, he was just inducted, a couple of years ago into the Theater Hall of Fame.
Well, sure.
He is, and deserves it,
Wow.
Again, brilliant, doesn't suffer fools gladly. I'm trying to think of things that, I mean, I wasn't around during the process of Hairspray like he was. I know he is very opinionated about, like, if he really does want, or if he really feels that something doesn't make sense, he'll really say, like, you know, this doesn't make sense.
Did you know he was my vocal coach, by the way? No, just kidding. Yes.
No. And, you know, who knows? Everyone knows the way Harvey speaks and love him for it. He helps develop things along the way because he's so smart.
Right.
And now he's developing Kinky Boots, which is coming to Broadway.
That's the Cyndi Lauper musical, yes.
Right. And he's very smart. He knows how to figure things out. He's like, okay, that doesn't make sense. Let's do this. Let's do that. He's got more irons in the fire than, you know, fire official.
I was wondering where you would go with something. That. Yes. Now, Julie Holst.
He's always doing something. He's you know, one of the creative geniuses of the theater. I don't have any dirt.
As I said, I'm not looking for dirt. I'm looking or necessarily.
Anecdotes. Yeah. No, I mean, he was very helpful in creating, I think, his character. Like I said, he has opinions. It was fun. When, I used to go visit him because I live right around the block from the Neil Simon Theater.
Oh, nice.
I used to go visit him. He had a really amazing open-door policy about his dressing room. You could always go visit Harvey at his dressing room. And he had pictures all over the wall of everyone involved with the production. And he, you know, being the famous homosexual that he is, he redecorated that dressing room to within an inch of its life. I think he had like a soda fountain in there. And
Wait. Sorry, hold on. Julie, wait a minute. Harvey Fierstein is a homosexual?
Can you believe it?
Wait, oh my.
Shocking. Breaking news.
Everything's coming together now. A lot more, you know, that really makes sense now. I was wondering about the whole torch.
Coming together for you.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Now, speaking...
So anyway, but we I used to go visit him in the dressing room all the time, and, I tell you, it was a riot to see Harvey gearing up to play, you know, Mrs. Turnblad. I mean, you haven't lived until you've been half-wigged, half girdled, you know, the phony boobs, you know, the stockings, you know, the pantyhose. I mean, I'm telling you, it was quite a visual.
I can imagine. Well, yeah, we all saw it on stage, but you saw it up close. I can't imagine being like 2 feet from that. You know, being 800 feet away in an audience is one thing, but, you know, looking at this person, having to act with them and not break up, you know.
But believe it or not, I have to say, I'll tell you, close up, bewigged and bejeweled, Harvey Fierstein is gorgeous. I'm telling you, he and Lainey Kazan could have been cousins. I'm telling you.
Well, Charles Bush makes a pretty good-looking lady.
He was a beautiful woman.
Okay.
He and Lainey could have done a whole, you know, family thing. It was really quite something. So, it was great.
Now, speaking of comic geniuses, I also do want to ask, because you have done TV and film as well. You've had parts in various things, and you worked on two different Woody Allen films. So I'd love to know... What that was, didn't you? It was Celebrity, I think, and what was the other one? Small Time Crooks. You had a little...
Small Time Crooks. I haven't done those kind of things in a long time, but Woody Allen was very pleasant to work with. He's very calm. He runs a very calm set. I remember just being very calm. Very, you know, shy. He is shy, famously shy. But he wasn't funny. He was all business. But I just remember it was a very nice, pleasant experience. And all the people that worked for him and with him were just fantastic. So,
Now here's a question. Here's a question for Julie Halston here. If you don't want to name names, that's fine. But I'm curious, what was your absolute worst working experience? It could be TV, it could be film, it could be theater. You don't have to name the names, but I'm wondering what was the you were like, oh my God, what was the worst?
Well, I will tell you, when I actually talk about it in my act, I was originally hired to play one of the dead bodies in Silence of the Lambs.
Okay,
that was my first feature film. I was one of the dead bodies. My agent called and said, it is a new Jodie Foster film. It's about a psycho serial killer. Skins alive, large Midwestern women. We thought of you. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Anyway, that was a hard experience. We were filming at like 2 in the morning. I was sort of semi-nude. I had mud all over me. It was freezing cold. I had dye all over me. Dried pastina? Really? Thrown all over my body?
Oh.
Like one of my boobs was hanging out. It was a tough experience. And guess what? I was cut out of the
home. The director keeps saying, Julie, we need more. Please give us more.
Yes, they did. It was hysterical. They wanted more. I'm like, more? What more? I mean, you know, I wouldn't say it was a horrendous experience, but it's part of the act.
Oh, no, I understand why. That's hilarious. But what were you doing?
That would be one.
What were you doing before, since you really got into acting through Charles Bush, seeing his show and all that? What jobs were you doing before that? Did you have a career?
I was on Wall Street. I was a librarian on Wall Street. Do you believe it?
I didn't know they could read.
Wall Street. So it was a little crazy, but I needed a job, and I had put myself to college, Hofstra University, thank you, Hempstead, Long Island. I had put myself through college by working in the college library. So I needed a job after the school.
Right.
And I actually got a job down on Wall Street with a company called Brundage Story and Rose. And do you believe that the guy who actually hired me is now my financial advisor and one of my dearest? I mean, I just love him to death, and he has his own investment counsel firm now, Douglas D. Lane and Associates, and he's great. And
nice
plug.
It all
comes together. I believe in closure. I believe in dragging everyone through my life at the same time, and I do. do, and I'm very fortunate.
Well, that's really important. I mean, if you think about it, just this this friendship of seeing a show by this guy Charles Bush. Oh, he's really funny. That's a great show. Let me come back again. Let me bring friends. And that turns into a long-term friendship, a career, this constant symbiotic relationship with Theater in Limbo. He doesn't call it that anymore because he's just a, you know, Charles Bush now. But right. You know, growing with him through both your careers, that's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yes. No, it's fantastic. You really can't get better because, you know, this is a very peripatetic, do you love that word?
Oh, yes, I do.
Career as it is, and it's, you know.
In fact, last year I suffered from peripatitis. It was very painful.
Yes, but at the same time, you always are sort of like you're in a show for 3 months and then you don't see Sonny for a long time. But Charles and I, because we speak all the time, we see each other all the time, there's real consistency there. And also when you have real consistency, he writes. He knows how to write for me. He knows how to write for the same people that he works with. It's all shorthand. It's so much easier, and it's also deeper. It's richer and deeper. We're family. So it's
now,
a very
now,
special thing.
Speaking of family, and we just have another moment or two with the wonderful Julie Halston, but let's talk family because you married, apparently, into a rather large family, you know, with stepchildren and everything. I mean, and it was, I think, was it later in life? Tell us about your home life, your personal life.
Well, you know, when you marry an Irish person, you generally get kids. Those Irish people, they love kids. Yes, my husband had 5 kids, and they ranged in age from 9 to, you know,
87,
30,
which
at
is
the time. Yeah, yeah, but 30, 40 maybe at the time. But the 3 of them were adults already. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like I, you know, it wasn't a Brady Bunch or, you know, 8 is enough kind of thing. But 2 of them were young children when I first married Ralph. And I went to a lot of soccer tournaments. And, oh, my God, up and down the East Coast, there was a lot of soccer tournaments. And let me tell you, I never knew anything about soccer, and I suddenly learned what offsides was all about and read all these flags. And I was like, really? This is not the glamorous life I thought. But, you know, I really enjoyed it. And he now has a great-grandchild.
Oh, Mazel McClick, yes.
Well, in fact, I have a great-grandchild.
Right, yeah.
And, of course, considering that, and I will tell you, I mean, I'm a middle-aged woman, but one of the things I talk about in my act is my facelift, because I just had a facelift.
Why would you do this?
It's fantastic, I got to tell you. I would urge everyone, maybe not every man, but every woman, if you can, if you're unhappy with what you look like, get a facelift. But you know what? The kids are amazing. The kids are great. They're very, very supportive. They were very supportive of our marriage. You know, I think at first it must be very odd. It's like, what's Daddy doing? What's he doing? Who's this actress? This actress with the gay following. What's going on here?
Were you married before?
Right.
Was this
I
your
was
first?
Married, yes, when I was very young. I think I was 10 and I think he was 12.
Yes. It was in the Ozarks, yes.
Yes. I was married to my college sweetheart for 6 years, and then it was like we looked at each other and said, "What? What's going on here? Who are you?" But wait, we're 10 and 12, but this is not a good idea. So, and then I was single for, you know, 9-10 years, and it was very sort of Sex and the City, you know. Living in the 80s, in the single life in the 80s in New York City, it was quite the thing. And then I met Ralph. He interviewed me. He worked for 1010 Winds, which was the all-news radio station, biggest all-news radio station, I believe, still in the country. And he interviewed me, and that was the end of it. Boom, we got married.
Oh, my, wow. How long was the courtship?
Courtship was not that long. I think after 4 months,
wow.
We decided, oh, let's do this. And but we met July of 1991 and we married August of 92. But I think after 4 or 5 months we decided.
You knew that it was going to be
permanent. Yeah. Well, I was 35 years old. I wasn't a kid anymore, and he was, you know, 50. So it was like, let's do this. You know, what are we? We're going to have like what, a 10-year engagement? No, crazy. So we just did it.
Now I think also people would want to know.
Decades ago.
Right? Yeah, that's right. You'll fairly soon. You'll be coming up on your silver anniversary, God willing.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
Yes. So I'm very, very, very grateful. It's been quite a great journey, honey. It really is.
I'm sure, but the other thing is, I'm sure people would want to know is, does he's no longer at INS. I think he works with Howard Stern over at Sirius.
He works for Howard Stern. He's the anchorman for the Howard 100 News. People who have Sirius XM hear him every day. And, he does have one of the most mellifluous, fantastic voices in the world. Howard is an amazing genius, a fantastic employer.
Good.
It's been a great, great 7 years. And I think Howard's show is better than ever. He really is. He's just amazing, funny, hilarious, smart. He's just great. And the Howard 100 News team is just fantastic. And, of course, they can sort of say whatever they want. And
right.
That's fun, too. But Ralph is definitely the anchor man. So it's been a great journey. And we're very grateful.
Well, we are so great. Oh, sorry. Pardon me. Yes?
Yeah, no, that's it, And all I can say is come and enjoy. Come and enjoy. It's so good.
She's talking She's talking about her show, Classical Julie. It's at Birdland, which is on West 44th Street and 8th Avenue. To find out more and to buy tickets, go to birdlandjazz.com. Birdlandjazz.com to see Julie Halston in Classical Julie. And then keep an eye and an ear out because, there's a new Charles Bush play cooking up that may be at primary stages.
It's going to be at primary stages,
next
season, I believe. So keep an eye out for that. And then come to Birdland. We'll talk Long Island. We'll talk the classics. We'll talk about my facelift. We'll talk about Superstorm Sandy. We'll talk about everything that's on everyone's mind right now. And we'll have a lot of fun.
Well, if it's anything like this conversation, it's going to be a billion times, as fun or more fun with Julie, the Heavenly Halston. Thank you so much. It's just been a delight talking to you.
Thank you, my dear. Have a wonderful time. Hello, Colorado. Hello, Great Neck.
Thank you, Julie.